From 3D printing to app design and other technology, we take a look this hour at how some of Baltimore's best and brightest are working to bridge the digital divide. Could an old warehouse on Greenmount Avenue become a mecca for creative minds? We'll hear about a new incubator being developed by one of the three nonprofits highlighted in this hour of the show. In Federal Hill, a closed-down recreation center is now home to a thriving tech center, offering courses ranging from web design to circuits and electronics. Plus, we'll hear from the co-founder of Code in the Schools, an organization bringing computer programming education to students across the city. Three examples of tech for good on Midday after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us for our second hour today. In this hour, Tech for Good, how three organizations are using technology to make a difference in Baltimore. They're teaching kids about topics ranging from game development to graphic design in an effort to bridge the digital divide. And we'll be talking to some team members and students from three local nonprofits, including a group that's transforming a warehouse on Greenmount Avenue into an incubator. We'll be hearing about that during this hour of the show. First, we hear from Gretchen LeGrand, co-founder of Code in the Schools, an organization that provides computer science education to more than 2,500 kids throughout the city each year. Gretchen LeGrand, nice to have you on the show. It is LeGrand, right?
It's LeGrand, thanks.
It's not LeGrand.
It's not, you know, the fancy way.
You haven't gone through life correcting people, say, Gretchen LeGrand, and you don't say, it's LeGrand?
No, I correct them to LeGrand.
Well, it's nice to have you on the show. Please tell us what Code in the Schools is.
Sure. So we're a nonprofit we founded about 2.5 years ago in early 2013. The idea being that there's a huge gap between the number of jobs in computer programming and computing careers and what's being taught. So it's not taught widely in school. So a lot of youth who may have real talent for it are not having access to that education.
Some people who are still struggling with, you know, using flip phones and haven't moved over to smartphones yet wonder, what's code? What are you talking about? Because there have been articles recently saying, you know, code ought to be taught early in even with elementary school kids.
Sure. So there are a number of different computer programming languages that you can use to develop all kinds of software applications. When we talk about code, we're not usually talking about one specific language. We're talking about teaching really the foundational concept. So it's mostly logic. It's really logic. It's problem solving. It's building solutions to problems in the computer language, and so that the computer can
we have to understand the language first, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
Sort of the building blocks
exactly.
of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And what's your background, Gretchen?
My background's kind of all over the place. I started out in math and science. I worked in the nonprofit sector and taught math for a while. When I met my husband, he was a developer, and so I sort of said, you know, oh, I've always, you know, been interested in this.
He's a he's not a real estate.
He's a software developer.
Software developer, right? Okay.
He's a computer programmer.
Right.
Yeah. And so,
what's his name?
His name's Mike. Mike LeGrand.
Okay.
Not LeGrand.
Okay. So how did the idea of Code in the Schools come about?
So because of my background in the nonprofit sector and sort of this, we had built a few games together after I learned to code. We thought, wouldn't it be great if we taught kids how to make video games and they learned to code and then, you know, possibly could go into these jobs. And so that's how the idea came about. And in 2013, national organization called Code.org released a video promoting computer science education. And we sort of took that and ran from there.
And you're doing this all in Baltimore City?
Our direct service is within the city limits. Yeah.
And how do you operate? Like, do you have a central location or do you move around to schools?
So we have a central office. We actually just moved to the Center Theater on North Avenue. So
no kidding. Somebody else going in a station north.
Yes,
all right. Good
we
for
love
you.
It there. So that's where our administrative offices are. But then all of our instructors we send to schools throughout the city.
Now, so they're providing something the schools are not providing. I mean, I assume that's the case, right? And is it all after school? Or?
We do in-school computer science enrichment, and then we do after-school programming, and we do summer camps too. So we did a bunch of summer programs.
Oh, tell us about that. Did you do a summer? Just finish a summer program?
We're in the last week of our summer program.
Oh, so you took time off to come
Friday.
Over here, be here. Oh,
yes.
Very good. What do you do in the summer?
So actually, this summer we ended up probably increasing the number of kids we serve by about 500% from last summer. So we had over 800 youth in our programs across the city, ranging from pre-K to 12th grade. So one of the program we worked with youth works. That was a large part of what we did. So we had a lot of youth workers doing computer science education training. And then we had the Prodigy program, which is a program for rising seniors. That it's an intensive course in web development. So they learned HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript over the summer.
And JavaScript. So some real basic stuff there that they wouldn't otherwise have.
Yes.
Yeah. So I want to ask you this. When you mentioned video games, right, and kids get excited, right, because that's something they know, and here you're going to teach them actually how to create one?
Yeah.
Right? So do they start thinking, well, I'm going to have a career in video games?
We hope, yeah.
Okay, but there's more to it than that, right? And with those IT jobs, those jobs that you talked about that are out there, you're talking about development jobs, developing software.
Yeah.
Not just games. Right.
Right. There's about 20,000 jobs, open jobs in Maryland right now in computing. So, and that's across fields. That's IT, that's computer programmers, software developers. It's a whole range.
So you're thinking, well, we don't want to just develop kids who are going to be IT support, right? You want kids who are going to use their minds, be creative.
Exactly.
With this.
Yeah. So, I mean, we really view computer programming as a creative process. You're starting from nothing and you're building something completely new. So you really do have to be creative. And we like to encourage that. Video games are a great way to do that with kids because they love them. And because you're also, you know, along with the code that you're writing, you can develop your own art. You can do all kinds of fun and creative things.
And do you find the children, because you get some pretty young kids in the program,
yeah,
right?
Pre-K.
Eager to do this?
Yes.
Very eager. I mean, it's not like, oh, I want to go into a computer education class. I'm not sure I want to do that.
We don't usually have to pull very many teeth or twist any arms.
And how does it break down boys and girls?
Well, we specifically target girls for some programs, so we try to have a pretty even mix. But often we do get more boys who self-select into programs if we aren't intentional about it.
And so code in the schools, you have contracts. Is that how you do this? How you fund? I was curious how you're funded.
We're both funded through contracts with schools and programs and also grant funding.
Very good. And is it you, Gretchen? Is your husband still developing games or is he working with you on this?
He is. Yeah. He works for Sparky Pants Game Studio.
Sparky Pants.
Also just moved into the Center Theater.
Yeah. Wow. That's excellent.
Yeah. But he's also on the board of directors.
With Gretchen LeGrand today is Dinesia Trogdon, who is a Code in the Schools student, a rising senior at Good Old Western High. Dinesia, nice to have you on the show with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about your experience with Code in the Schools. Was it just this past year when you were a junior?
Yes. During my junior year, my technology teacher, she asked me if I would be interested in coding over the summer, because she knew that I had an interest in coding as my career, and I'm on the robotics team. So I was like, yeah.
Cool. You have a robotics team at Western?
Yes.
Yeah.
All girls.
Is it? I know. Well, that's what Western is, right? So I'm curious about that, if you don't mind me asking. Like, you've worked on a robotics project this past year?
Yes. This year, we actually went to the first competition in North Carolina, and we competed against, I believe, over 50 robots. We didn't win, but
What was your robot like? Can you describe it for us?
Our robot was very tall. It had omni wheels, which means it can spin in place instead of just going straight and backward.
Was it the form of like a human mannequin or something?
No.
Like that? What was its form?
It looks like a big triangle, actually.
Okay.
With four wheels, we could pick up four. We could pick up four totes and a recycling bin on top. And the game actually was to stack as many recycling bins and totes to get as many points as you could.
Yeah, so the robot would actually pick these things up?
Yes, the robot has arms.
And it would pick up recycling bins?
Yes.
And totes, you mean like a tote bag?
Like a tote where you put clothes in, a tote that you could put in tools. Yeah, things
All right.
like that.
So it's like your butler, maybe, helping you around the house? Is that the idea?
A slower version of a butler.
Did you have a name for your robot?
I really cannot remember it.
No kidding. You can't remember, or you didn't have one?
I can't remember it.
Okay, that's all right. I'm putting you on the spot. It's live radio. Dinesia Trogdon. So tell us about coding the schools then. So coding took you to another place beyond robotics, right?
Yes. As I stated before, I already had an interest in computers. That's what I wanted to do with my career. I knew that I wanted to do something with computers, but I really didn't know what. So once I got to coding the schools, they explained that we were going to be doing web design. So as the weeks progressed, this is our last week, the sixth week, and right now, I feel like I would be able to go into web design. This is something that I like. This is something that I'm learning. This is something that I have progressed in over the summer. I haven't been forced into it. So I really like it. It's my choice, and I would be honored to pursue a career into it.
That's interesting. So the part of this that you like the most is web design?
Yes.
For now? Yeah. And where do you think that might lead you? I mean, what do you like about this? Besides just saying, yeah, I like web design, is it because you're starting from scratch? It's your own ideas? What is it?
Yes. I think the thing I like the most is it's my ideas. I'm not going off of anybody else. I can build what I want through my vision. If someone asked me to make a website for them, I would ask them for their ideas, but it would be my creation.
Right, right. Good for you. So you have a senior year coming up at Western and then college. So you've been thinking, you select a college based on if they're going to be able to provide you with more education in this field, right?
Yes.
What have you found out there when you go looking for colleges? Is it do you have a lot of choices?
I plan on going on another tour as I went on a tour during the spring of my junior year, but I plan on going on another tour before I make my final decision. So with this final last tour, I hope that I can find a college that will give me what I'm looking for.
Mm. Okay. I was just wondering if when you get out there and looking for colleges, more and more colleges offering computer education, web design, software development. What would you say, Gretchen?
Yeah, I think it is something that people are looking at offering more widely. We also not that we discourage college, but we also feel that if you have the talent for computer programming, in many instances you can go straight into a career.
Right.
And then maybe have your employer pay for college.
What about Dinesia? Would she qualify for something like that?
Dinesia's very talented.
Yeah.
Dinesia can do whatever she wants.
Yeah, okay. But, I mean, she looked like you headed toward college, though. You're thinking you should do that.
Yes.
Do a four-year college. Well, good for you. So did you, Gretchen, you picked Western High School because there's all girls there. You really want to get more girls interested in this.
We did recruit from Western. That was one of the reasons. We have a great relationship with the technology teacher there. Heather Romney is amazing. And so she sent us some really great candidates. But we also recruited from other high schools around the city. So some of the students came from classes that they had taken with us in video game design and development. And then we also recruited from Carver and Digital Harbor High
Gretchen,
School.
Gretchen, you went from what? 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Two and a half years ago,
you and your husband said, listen, I want to do this. I want to bring more kids into this and provide more education on coding, right?
Yep.
And look what you're doing it.
Yeah.
Did you really? You had 2,500 kids this past year?
We did.
And most all city schools?
Yes.
Well, good for you.
Yes.
Gretchen LeGrand, co-founder with her husband of Code in the Schools. And your website codeintheschools.org?
Yep.
Very good. Gretchen, nice to have you on the show. And Dinesia, we wish you luck with senior year.
Thank you.
And picking a college. Dinesia Trogdon from Western High School. You're listening to The Midday Show. This is Tech for Good, a special hour here where we're looking at what some nonprofits are doing in the city. And coming up 3 years ago, a public school teacher decided to transform a Federal Hill Recreation Center on the verge of closing into a tech center for kids from all over the city. All about the Digital Harbor Foundation when we get back here on Midday. Welcome back to Midday. In this hour, we're learning about three nonprofits in Baltimore bringing technology to children and to others in the city. With us for this segment of the show is Steph Grimes, Director of Education at Digital Harbor Foundation, a tech center that provides after-school programs, summer camps, and special events for families from all over the city, in addition to technology workshops for teachers. Steph Grimes, nice to have you on the show with us.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Your husband's in the studio. I should say back in the studio.
Yeah, I am here.
Sean Grimes was on Midday once a few years ago.
In a former lifetime, yeah.
Yeah, well, were you director of technology at Digital Harbor Foundation at the time?
I was not. I was a mobile app developer at the time.
I think I remember this. Okay. And I wouldn't be surprised if Mario Armstrong was in the studio with us.
Yes, he was.
Yep. Oh, was this like 3 or 4 years ago?
It was. It was quite a while ago.
All right, Sean. Well, Sean Grimes is here now in his capacity as Director of Technology at Digital Harbor. So we should go to the beginning here because we've heard a lot about Digital Harbor Foundation, but really don't know much about its origins. I do remember the name Andrew Coy. Mm-hmm. So tell us who Andrew Coy was, would you, Steph? Let's start the story there.
Yeah, so Andrew Coy is our executive director at the foundation, and he started as a high school teacher at Digital Harbor High School. And we actually met him, Sean and I met him, at an event called Education Hack Day back a few years ago. Mike Brenner was running it in conjunction with Andrew, and it was an idea to get technologists and teachers together to solve their technology problems at school, to build products, to build websites, things like that. So we met Andrew that weekend, and he had also met Sean Lane, who was running the current version of Digital Harbor Foundation, which was very different from what we've created. And he said, hey, they've got this rec center that's closing down. What would you do with it? And Andrew said, well, I'd turn it into a tech center, and had lots of good reasons why he felt that way. It was right down the street from where he was teaching.
Where is that tech center?
We're located in South Baltimore. We're in Federal Hill. So we're right on Cross Street.
Yeah, no,
and
but
Light
what
Street.
What street? Is it on Light Street?
It's on Light and Cross, yeah.
So it was a city rec center.
Yes. Yep.
So what did Andrew decide to do there, Sean?
So basically what he wanted to do was kind of take over the traditional rec center, which was built to was meant to build able-bodied young people who would enter the workforce eventually in factories, and convert that into youth who could learn new techniques and new technologies for the jobs that exist now in our area and the careers that exist now rather than the factories that were closing down. So he moved out the kind of dodgeball and the rope and the jump ropes, and we brought in computers, 3D printers, electronics, soldering irons, and high-speed internet so that the kids could learn new skills that were relevant in today's economy.
You know, Gretchen LeGrand just mentioned the gap that has been mentioned on this show a number of times. When you look at the Baltimore economy, the Maryland economy, we keep being told about the number of jobs available in IT,
yep,
right? And the lack of workforce to fill those jobs. So let's talk about that a little bit. First of all, some people are still sort of semi-shocked that there are so many jobs available in this field. And if you don't mind, just what accounts for that?
Well, and I can answer very directly to this because I used to be in this field for the last almost 20 years. I've been a technologist and I've seen the job openings. I've seen the unqualified candidates who are coming through and applying for positions that aren't quite there yet, and not really seeing anything that's kind of building them up. As a mobile app developer, I could tell you that there were a ton of people who were looking to hire mobile app developers, but could not find enough developers to do the work. Every mobile app developer has a whole list of jobs that they're going to be doing after the current one they're on. There's a waiting list. Some of my friends run contracting companies, and they can't get enough non-H-1B visa employees to fill local jobs. They just don't have the candidates. In fact, they're scouting me. Who you got coming up? Who's going to be graduating that I can hire?
Steph, can you explain what the gap is? What's the gap in education then? What those applicants that Sean's talking about, what are they missing?
So I think the biggest problem is that the school systems nationally are so behind the times. You know, we're still teaching to that. You know, if you think about traditional schooling and you think about what you learn in class and how you work through school, it's the same as it was when our parents went to school, when their parents went to school, you know, 50 plus years ago. And so things, they really haven't changed that much. The core structure of them hasn't changed. For me, I see, you know, when we see our kids come into the after school space, into the tech center, a lot of the things that we're working on them with are things like problem solving. Not here's the answer for the test that you're going to take at the end of the semester or the end of the year. But here's a sample problem. Let's figure it out. And so there's a big gap between what education and what traditional school is sort of, they're still not quite there yet. And it's a huge ship to turn around.
So when we hear about technology in the, say, the public schools, K through 12, public or private schools, we think of, iPads being available or smart boards, right? We're not really talking about what the kids are being taught.
Yeah. Well, and it's not about the tech per se. I mean, we use tech as
That's what I mean. It's not.
Right. We use it as a vehicle, but really it's about the problem solving. When kids first come to us, it's if they run into an issue, they stop and they raise their hand and they want you to answer it for them. And one of the first things we ask them when that happens is, what did you Google? And usually we get a blank stare, but by the end of their time with us, they're like, "Oh, well, I Googled this." And then instead, we might go, "Well, try Googling for this keyword and see if that gives you a different result." It's a very different, like Steph said, they're teaching the answer is given for the test that's coming, versus we have no idea what the life test is coming. Instead, we should be teaching the problem solving and how to learn new techniques.
So some of the applicants you saw when you were in that field, what were they missing? The coding, for instance?
Not even that. It's more the problem solving, really. It's kind of those soft skills of they took some sort of technology test, like an A-plus certification, and they can tell you this plugs into that that goes there.
Yeah.
But as far as troubleshooting or problem solving, they're lacking those kind of core skills and learning what's going to be new.
So knowing that, the application at Digital Harbor Foundation, could you describe that? It's like, you know, a fourth grader, a fifth grader comes to you for an after-school program. What do they get from you?
So our programs look a little bit different depending on what grade you're in, what age you are, as they should. And so our kids come in and they get, for our middle school and high school program, and our elementary school program gets this as well with some new staffing that we have. But they come in and they're given a challenge. They're given the tools, they're given materials and say, here, build a robot using these random cups, motors, materials that are on the table and available to you. Build a robot that draws.
Cool.
Go.
Yeah, really. Wow. And they work in teams?
They can work in teams. They work in individuals. We mix it up. We try to keep them so that they are building some of those team building and how to communicate as a group and how to communicate with other people that you're working with, because that's really important. That's a good life skill to have. But they also get a chance to sort of be themselves and work on projects that they're interested in and working on projects that that they want to bring their own flavor to. And it's really fun to just see what comes out of that when we don't have a prescribed, it should look like this when it's done.
Right.
And everybody's is going to look the same.
Some basic information then. How old are the kids? What's the age range of children who benefit from Digital Harbor Foundation? Where do they come from?
So we've got kids that come from all over the city. We do our core recruitment from local and high-need populations, because that's the population that we like to serve. But we're also really open to having kids that come from better-off areas across the city who can come, you know, their parents bring them. And it provides for a really interesting mix of diversity in our space to see the kids all working together and learning together and bringing their own personalities and things to the table.
Do you recruit kids, or this is just open invitation, or
it's
do you have
both
to limit the number that you can take?
Yeah, we do have to limit the number that we can take. So we've got spots opening up for our fall programs now, and we're looking at about 150 kids for the first few weeks of the program, for the first 3 months. From third grade all the way through, we recruit up till 10th grade because we really want to have them for a year or two before they graduate high school, because we feel like that's a good time for us to make some impact.
So, Steph, excuse me, what were you doing in life before this?
Oh, that's
were
a good
you a
question.
Teacher?
I was a teacher. Yeah. I taught kindergarten in Harford County Public Schools for 5 years before leaving to teach myself app design. Which was completely different.
When did you become kind of a tech head? Was it because of Sean?
I think it was always sort of there. I just didn't have access to it. You know, Sean grew up having access.
She's one of those. She was one of those girls that everybody thought was, you know, not interested in math science.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, she really is.
Right? Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, if you ask me about math, it's, you know, I'm not good at math. Mm-hmm. But, you know, having to teach math, having to learn how to teach math.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sean, what do you get out of this? What's the reward for you?
I love to give back. I've always loved working with you. So I was an assistant scoutmaster. Before that, I was an Eagle Scout and on. But I really see this as some of the kids have just changed me by the way that they've changed in our program. And I have whole new insights on the youth that we work with and things like that. But also, I see these as potential hires for all of my friends who are now running companies that hire youth. And this is kind of reinvigorating the Baltimore workforce for tech jobs, because we have so many open tech jobs. And with companies like OrderUp and Millennial Media and AOL, you know, all of those are big companies that are always looking to hire and need new talent.
Guess who's in the studio with us? Mackenzie Smith. Mackenzie Smith is a seventh grade student at Greenmount School and went to the Digital Harbor Foundation, was a student there. So, Mackenzie, welcome to the Midday Show.
Hi.
Hi, nice to have you here. Did I have that right, the Greenmount School?
Yeah.
So you like math and science. How did you get to Digital Harbor Foundation? And I don't mean you took a car or the bus. I mean, why did you go there?
Well, one of my friends actually was going there during the fall. I was going to. So his mom emailed everybody in the class's parents, and my mom was kind of just like, oh, yeah, okay, you can go.
All right. You wanted to go? You wanted to see what it was about?
Actually, I had no idea where I was going, because she was just like, oh, you're going downtown for an interview. And I had just gotten out of school. I was just like, well, what interview? Because I had no idea where I was going.
Really?
Yeah.
So you get to Digital Harbor Foundation, you walked into this old rec center, right? And you sat at a desk, and what happened next?
Well, Sean interviewed me, and he asked me a couple questions, and then he gave me, like, a tour of the space.
Well, were you interested in any of this stuff?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, okay. So we back up a little bit here. You have an interest in computers?
Yeah.
And what?
3D printing.
3D printing. I'm interested in that, too. I think it's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me, what did you work on at Digital Harbor? First, excuse me. I guess the interview went well with Sean, right?
Yeah.
Because they accepted you. All right. So once you get past that, what kind of project did you work on there?
Well, I think the first week we did this program called Scratch, which is basically coding and making a game or making a video. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you learned Scratch?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did 3D printing and other stuff.
Did you design something to be printed out 3D?
Yeah.
Like, what was it?
It was a Scratch Cat, actually, because...
Scratch Cat?
Yeah.
What's a Scratch Cat?
So the program Scratch has, like...
A cat.
I guess a mascot, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I kind of designed that.
And it looks like a kitty cat? And then did you print it out?
Yeah.
Well, what was that like? You saw this cat created out of, what was it made out of, wax or something? What?
Plastic, actually.
Plastic.
Yeah.
And it just, tell folks who haven't seen this. So, you know, there's people out there still using flip phones. You know, would you tell them what happens when you print out something 3D? What does it look like?
It actually looks really cool because it's printed layer by layer in one single color that's really hard to change, and it melts it, and yeah, it just moves and forms whatever you want it.
So it looks like Scratch Cat flat on your computer screen is a 3D, like a little statue of a cat?
Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. What else have you done with 3D printing?
I've made, well, this is show called Doctor Who.
And yeah, oh, know about that, yeah.
Yeah, and I printed a TARDIS. I, like, designed a TARDIS, and I printed it.
A TARDIS is, I don't know Doctor Who that well, okay. What is it?
It's his blue box.
His blue box?
Yeah.
So what are you thinking, Mackenzie? you're thinking, I don't know, in the seventh grade, if you think about careers, you haven't been thinking about that, have you? Or did someone say to you, you know, you could have a job in this field someday? I don't remember thinking about jobs in the seventh grade, except, you know, shoveling snow in the wintertime. But I wasn't thinking about careers. So are you thinking ahead? Does someone have you thinking ahead?
Yeah, definitely my parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you like this?
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of. Oh, you're not sure?
Usually out of nowhere, they're just like, oh, yeah, you can do this. How about you do this? And I'm just like, okay.
So you'll try different things.
Yeah.
And how often did you go to Digital Harbor? Did you go there after school?
Yeah, I went Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Very good. Sean, can you talk a little bit about the 3D printing experience
for
the kids?
Yeah. You'll notice they're a bit jaded or over 3D printing now because it is something they get asked a lot. So they're like,
I
have to explain it again.
Yeah, I was picking that up a little bit. That's all right.
Yeah.
Do a lot of radio, do you, Mackenzie?
So 3D printing is basically we use a plastic that gets melted down and then a machine or kind of a robot builds it up layer by layer. Like Mackenzie said. And so you design the object on the computer. There's a couple different design tools, and some you'll design in 3D, some you'll design in just two dimensions. And then the 3D printer takes your design and builds it up. It is quite magical to have this kind of digital object on the screen come to life right before your eyes. Now, it does take a little bit of time, but the kids love watching the 3D printers go. The Digital Harbor Foundation has a really strong 3D printing program. We have a huge collection of 3D printers, quite honestly, that we've built up over the years. And we have a lot of experience with 3D printers. And we're trying to parlay that into teaching other educators how to do 3D printing like we've done so that they don't make the same mistakes we did getting into it.
Oh, so you've had teachers come in for some help.
Educators from all over, so not just formal classroom teachers, but also librarians. We've had the Baltimore City Public Library System, the Baltimore County Public Library System send folks, libraries from different school or librarians from different school centers, mm-hmm. And even now other nonprofit organizations such as Enable, which 3D print prosthetics, they are now sending some of their staff members to our workshops as well.
Really. The 10th grade, is that the top level of the students?
It's the top level that we recruit. Mm-hmm. And so they can stay in until they graduate high school. Actually, really, until they start high school or until they start college. Sorry. So, yeah, that's the top level.
So
that
it can
really
be ongoing. Yeah. They can do this multiple years.
Yes.
So, Mackenzie, you're going to stick with it?
Yeah.
You're going to go back to Digital Harbor this year, too?
Yeah.
Very good. Well, it's nice to have you on the show today.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Good luck with wherever it takes you. OK.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice to have you on the show. Mackenzie Smith, a student at Greenmount School, who is a student of the Digital Harbor Foundation, and we've been speaking with Steph Grimes and Sean Grimes. Steph is Director of Education there, and Sean, Director of Technology. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, yeah, thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We're going to take a break here, and we've got some more coming for you as we focus on tech for good here in Baltimore. When we get back, we're going to tell you about a new project that's going on in an abandoned building on Greenmount Avenue that could become a space for innovators and artists and tech entrepreneurs here in Baltimore City on Greenmount Avenue. So please stay tuned for that. I think I might need some help with the answer for Ellen when she gets on the line with us. Will Holman is our next guest here at Midday, project coordinator at Baltimore Arts Realty Corp, which is a nonprofit. BARCO is a nonprofit that transforms real estate properties throughout the city into artistic spaces. They got a couple of interesting projects going on. One we're going to talk about in this segment of the show is called Open Works, which is an old warehouse on Greenmount Avenue that BARCO is transforming. So first of all, Will, nice to have you on the show, Will Holman.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and do you mind taking this question from Ellen, who's been holding to ask this question?
Not at all.
Ellen's in Towson, and go right ahead with your question, Ellen. After that big buildup, is she not there, really?
She says, as an older person who wishes she had a way to learn these skills, she wants to know what opportunities are available to do her job as a college teacher better and also to feel like she's part of the modern world. You know, I was thinking about that when the Digital Harbor folks were just here, Sean and Steph Grimes, that would be a good place to go just to catch up on things.
Right.
Right? Not if, even if you weren't a teacher, if you just want to understand what's going on in the tech world, maybe you could just go down there and observe what's happening.
Sure, sure. So that's a little bit what our project OpenWorks is about. It's going to be a 34,000 square foot makerspace. And we'll have 7 different workshops in this building that you can access on a membership basis, just like a YMCA. We'll have some classrooms, and we'll have 150 small 50 square foot studios that you can rent month by month. So Ellen here in Towson could come on down and take a class aimed at adults or a professional development class aimed at college teachers and kind of brush up on her skills around.
You think you might have something like that then?
We sure hope to, yeah.
Now, you have to step back for a minute here. Maker space.
Yeah.
A maker space. I mean, it kind of makes, I like how that sounds. Some people would say incubation, right. Incubator hub, right?
Well, that's kind of the term of art that's bubbled up in the in the maker culture over the last 5 years. So there's about 320 of these spaces in America alone. There's a couple right here in Baltimore already that we've been in touch with. And we've also been in touch with the Fab Foundation out of Boston, out of MIT. And they've seeded over 500 of these labs around the world that have digital fabrication technology and classes to learn how to use it.
And what do you charge? I mean, are the fees for the space based on what? You're a nonprofit, so you're trying to make this as accessible to people as possible.
That's the hope. So we've spent the last 2 years since we acquired the building raising money from other local foundations, from the state, from the city, from some creative financing to try and keep the capital costs completely covered so that we can open the doors and offer services as cheap as possible. Again, comparing it to a YMCA, they have a fee-for-service model. Everybody pays something, but if you can't afford full price, they can subsidize your membership. So we hope to be a sliding scale membership organization.
Will Holman from Barco. Now, a lot of folks may want to know what Barco is. I said it before, Baltimore Arts Realty Corporation is a nonprofit. Why don't you step back and tell us about Barco?
So the Robert W. Deutsch Foundation has been around for a little over 20 years, and Dr. Deutsch was a nuclear physicist. He started 2 very successful technology companies, and when they were sold in 2010, he retired, he put the bulk of that money into the Deutsch Foundation. The Deutsch Foundation, under the leadership of Jane Brown, was looking for a way to put some of that money into underinvested neighborhoods in Baltimore and make safe, affordable, and sustainable space for Baltimore artists. We have a thriving creative community in the city, but as we all well know, they're often in substandard spaces. So they formed Barco, and don't let corporation throw you off. We are a 501c3 as a real estate development entity to tackle some building projects.
So let's go back to the Greenmount Avenue project, this warehouse that you were describing, 34,000 square feet.
Yes, sir.
Now, some people may hear Greenmount Avenue and say, where? You're developing what? Where? Because we should pinpoint where this is. It's across from Greenmount Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place I've driven by or taken the bus by many times. What was it before you got in there? Was it a warehouse or was it a shop of some kind?
Most recently, it was the Station North thrift store upstairs and a canned food distribution bank in the basement. It was owned by a suburban church, and they decided to move their charitable efforts elsewhere. Before that, for a long time, it was a trucking warehouse. It was an auto body workshop. The cemetery used to rent it.
Right. And you're not far from some housing for artists, right? Along
right.
Greenmount Avenue.
That's part of the reason we chose that location. For one thing, we're just inside the border of the Station North Arts and Entertainment District. So if you're a maker using our building, you may be able to access some of the tax benefits from being a creator in the Arts District. Secondly, we're right across the street from Lillian Jones Apartments and City Arts, which is...
City Arts is an apartment building.
Right. And Lillian Jones is a 2 or 3 year old building just to the south in Johnson Square. And then right up the street is Area 405, the Station North Tool Library, Baltimore Design School, and the Copycat Building. So within a baseball throw distance, we got about 200-plus units of really creative people.
And Will, you went over this before, but tell us what that space looks like on the inside, what you're going to have in there again, if you don't mind.
So we'll have 7 different workshops. So we'll have wood shop, metal shop, CNC and laser cutting, 3D printing, microelectronics, textiles, digital media. And then we'll have a computer classroom, 2 regular classrooms, 150 of these 50 square foot month by month studio rentals, and a retail front. So recently, I think it was on Friday, my good friends Jeremiah Jones and Sarah Templin of SoLab USA and Radica Textiles, respectively, were on Maryland Morning to talk about the Made in Baltimore pop-up shop that's happening currently on North Avenue. We launched, I helped organize that, and we launched that Saturday night. And part of the idea there is for a space like OpenWorks to be successful, but also for Baltimore's creative community to be successful at large, we have to help build the market for the products that people are making in this city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the quality of stuff that people are making here blows New York out of the water, D.C. out of the water, Philly out of the water, but people don't know that. So we're just trying to raise the awareness in the market.
Tell us who you think the makers will be. Who are these people? If you don't want to, you don't have to name names, but just to give folks an idea about what's going on in the city, who do you think is going to use your spaces?
So we have kind of 4 broad groups that we're looking at. Educational. We've been in touch with Digital Harbor and Code in the Schools, as well as another great group that works with kids called Future Makers. All the local universities. So that's one segment. The makers, which are your artists, designers, craftsmen, etc., and your business community, that's startups, but that's also workforce development, that's also professional development, that's mid-career training. And then the community, you know, I was just at the Johnson Square Community Association meeting last night, been in contact with New Green Mount West, we've been in contact with the folks up in Barclay. With the unemployment and skills gap problems in this city, OpenWorks can be a real facility for people looking to climb up the economic ladder.
And maybe some want to start their own business.
Yeah, either through, there's a great deal of people in this city with great entrepreneurial skills that maybe aren't feeding into the legitimate economy, shall we
right,
say.
Right. And we would the love, mainstream economy.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and that covers a lot of things. You see these shade tree mechanics out there. You see these carpenters and handymen in their vans. Well, they have skills to offer. They just need a platform to maybe step up their business practice a little bit and get out there.
Will Holman, project coordinator at Baltimore Arts Realty Corp, or BARCO. Something else I want to ask you about, we can come back to OpenWorks here in a minute, but the Motor House. I've been very interested in this project mm-hmm. up on North Avenue. The Motor House, first, let's locate it for people, where it is and what it was, and then what's going to be happening there.
It is right across the street from the Fred Lazarus Graduate Center at MICA, kind of at the corner, one building in from the corner of North and Howard.
Right,
from
I got it.
2006 to 2012, an artist entrepreneur named Sherwin Mark operated as the Load of Fun Studios. And before that, it was Lombard Office Furniture. And before that, it was a series of car dealerships.
That's the name Motor House,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and what are you doing in there?
So, Mr. Mark's built a wonderful artistic community there and ran into some headwinds with keeping the building open. And so we really want to build on that legacy and cement this as a nonprofit arts hub in Station North. We have a lot of great arts activity in Station North, but it can be a little siloed off. So we want to be an access point for people. So on the third floor, we have seven arts-related nonprofits, office space for them. On the second floor, we have seven full-size art studios and eight micro studios to kind of bring the price point down. On the first floor, we'll have a black box performance space, and we still have a little space we're trying to figure out.
What's the time frame on this one?
So we're looking to open that in November. It's been under construction for about 4 or 5 months. So,
you know, a lot of people hear these stories about what's going on at Station North. We've profiled them here on the show. The Sun, we've covered them, the City Paper, everybody, little bits and pieces. This development, that development, is still kind of shocking to some people to see what's going on along North Avenue. Some of the addresses you mentioned, some of our listeners hear these addresses and they say, really? Because nothing's been going on there for a long time. This is a part of Baltimore that was abandoned over the last 30, 40 years.
Right. And there's a lot of historical...
And Greenmount Avenue is another area.
Sure, yeah. And there's a lot of historical reasons for that disinvestment. And there's what you really need is some large institutional partners to take that first risk. So in addition to us, MICA built the Graduate Center Annex, and they're a partner in the Center Theater along with Hopkins. Then we have the Parkway Theater, which will be coming online in late 2016, early 2017. And that's home of the Maryland Film Fest. That's a wonderful thing. So these are filling in the big holes in the block. There's a lot of great activity going on in the North Avenue Market. And we hope if there's a couple big anchors in the block, all the little buildings in between are going to start to fill in with artists and entrepreneurs and retail and restaurants and vibrant businesses like Joe Squared and Liam Flynn's and Red Emma's start to come on down.
Yeah. It's still kind of surprising. It's great that it's happening. Still kind of surprising. And then when I read about your project here, by the way, the warehouse on Greenmount Avenue, so you're using that the bones of that building still, and just redoing the space in there. So.
Yes.
Yeah. And do you have any customers yet?
Well, it's a little early to be signing folks up yet, but we are working towards signing up some institutional partners first and then work our way down to the individuals. So on September 26th, we're going to be having a big community fair there as kind of our kickoff and groundbreaking, and we hope to have a lot of these partners present there and announce kind of some of these partnerships at that time.
So I could take a class there?
Of course.
Something I've been thinking about wanting to know how to do
make. So these kids don't leave you in the dust here with this 3D printing. Yeah.
Right. So I want to get into 3D printing. I could do it there. I could take a class.
For sure, yeah.
But you'll have someone will probably rent the space to do a class and then advertise it. Is that the idea?
So we look at ourselves as a platform, right? There's a certain number of classes that the space is going to have to undertake, which are basically safety classes. And then we're going to be looking to hire from Baltimore's creative community a lot of independent contractors to come in and share their expertise.
I got you. Will Holman, project coordinator at the Baltimore Arts Realty Corp, a nonprofit known as Barco, talking to us about their project Open Works. When do you think that warehouse will be open?
We're aiming for fall 2016.
Good for you, Will. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having
me. Yeah, good luck to you. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. That's our midday for today. I hope you enjoyed this last hour of Tech for Good. You can listen to the podcast again later on if you tell your friends if they didn't catch the show and they're interested in the nonprofits we profiled. It's WYPR.org. Have a great afternoon. We'll see you again tomorrow. The mayor of Baltimore will be on our show. Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, our noon guest.
Midday's producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producers are Michael Himowitz, Melody Simmons, and Connor Graham. Our interns are Samantha Max, Beatrix Lockwood, and Max Bookdahl. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming is available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.